Welcome to Men Are Nuts, a podcast about mental health, emotional health, psychological health, physical health awareness in men, women and society. First, it started with MEN, the acronym for Men Are Nuts. And we have a very special guest on the show for you today. And she's not too far away. I mean, I've done the episodes in as far away as Canada, Uganda, all over the place. But we've got somebody who's very close by. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Dr. Aisha Al-Sheikh. There's a lot to know about me. I've got a whole roller coaster in terms of my story, but basically I'm a health, personal development and human behavioral specialist. I have a PhD in pharmacy and pharmacology, specializing in neuroscience and Alzheimer's disease and cardiovascular. So that's my medical background. Now I turned into more of a rapid transformational therapist and hypnotherapist, master NLP practitioner, and went towards the personal development field and left my previous career and started my own business, my own journey. So it's a lot of changes that happened along the way.
Yeah, fantastic. And you're based in the same country, area as me. Just tell me about where we are.
Well, we are in Qatar at the moment. it is my hometown. However, I grew up in the UK. So I finished my high school in Qatar. So I was around 16, 17, where I left for a good almost 20 years.
Wow.
And it's been a long, long journey of transformation in the UK. It changed everything. It changed my mindset, the way I understand the world, overcoming past traumatic experiences, understanding myself. So it's been one hell of a journey, basically.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on, and I've had someone on from Qatar before, and two people from Qatar. So one of them is a footballer. So it was nice to have you on and to talk about your journey. You're smiling, and what's I can see the weather. What's the weather like for you where you are? Not that's going to be different.
You mean the actual weather?
Yeah. What's it like for you where you are? What's it?
It's nice, but it's getting worse. Because summer is coming close by. But I do miss the English weather, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yes. One of my favorites. Yeah. I know a lot of people hate the English weather because it's rainy and gloomy, but I actually miss that.
Yeah.
I love the winter in Qatar. It's really nice.
Yeah.
But the summer here can get to you. I'm not someone who loves the heat too much.
Yeah. It is. I mean, I've noticed. I mean, I was a person that ran away from the UK because of the weather. But then I wanted the sun, but I didn't want this extreme sun. So yes, for the listeners out there, it does. I mean, what we are now is about 31 today, and it will start climbing to 40s and 50s. So that's extreme weather. And as you know, it's a home. What do you think of Qatar getting the World Cup? And how do you feel about Qatar? I know it's your home, and how do you feel about it?
I feel very proud, actually. That's one, because compared to how it was before, before I left, and coming back to it now, it's a completely different country. And also the people have changed, not that much, but at least there are much more educated, much more open-minded people compared to when I was here. And there are lots of opportunities now, and I'm very, very proud that Qatar is being acknowledged by the world, especially after winning the World Cup for the 2020 World Cup. So this is something it's dear to me, and I'm very, very happy for it and very proud of it.
Yeah, fantastic. So let's talk about your kind of journey through. Living in, you know, as a child, living in Qatar, what's it like being female and stuff like that growing up?
My story is a bit different and heartbreaking, actually.
Right.
So, but it made me who I am today.
Yeah.
So, I have no regrets. I've learned to not have any regrets or guilt about any experiences, any painful experiences I've been through, because I realized every experience in this world is there to make you stronger and to make you learn something about life. And so I'll tell you briefly my story as a young child. My parents got divorced when I was a kid. I was only 3 years old. And we ended up being homeless for a bit because the mentality, this is not for everyone, this is only my family, my story. We ended up, our grandfather refusing us, but because basically divorce is a big taboo. So it's a big thing, and he didn't want her to get divorced, but it wasn't in her hand. So my father left, like abandoned us when we were kids. So what happened is we ended up being in a family relative's house because our grandfather didn't accept us as kids. They said, "You're my daughter, you're okay. His children are not welcome in my house." So obviously my mom couldn't leave us.
Yeah.
We ended up going into a relative's home. Unfortunately, my mom had to fight through it and actually get on her own feet. And I'm very, very actually proud of my mom because she's done everything that she could as a woman. As she started working really hard to get our own house. However, during that period when we were in our relative home, I've been subjected to all kind of abuse. Obviously, my mom was not aware of it. Even a lot of my grandmother wasn't aware of it. But been all kind of that things, molested as a child, beaten, verbally, emotionally abused, blackmailed, of them killing my mom, and growing up in that kind of environment, I was so broken as a child.
Yeah.
For me, I was always afraid. I was always felt I'm worthless growing up, because as I was also growing up, I developed an eating disorder because the abuser was forcing me to eat. So I developed a mechanism, like a coping mechanism of just trying to get through it so I don't get hit or get beaten.
Yeah.
So, it's been very, very, very painful experience.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you grow up in that kind of environment, and then we ended up having our own home later on. So I've been abused from the age of 3 till the age of 9, roughly.
Yeah.
Physically, emotionally, and and not being able to speak up and being manipulated so much that you're afraid to say anything. That mindset of the victim, or the victim mindset, or the abused child.
Yeah.
You know, you're afraid because if you say something will happen to you, or something will happen to someone you love. You know. So I remember as I was growing up, I was piling in on the weight as I was growing up, because that was the only way of me expressing or burying my emotions, Most people eat because they want to bury something. They want to change the way they feel. Yeah. So I wasn't aware, and I just started getting bigger and bigger through my teenagehood. And people started making fun of me family-wise. And if I said anything, "Oh, you're too sensitive." You know, that would say, that was the word for them, that give them the permission to be abusive, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, okay, no, I didn't want anyone to hate me or to, so I wanted love. I realized as an adult, because of what I've been subjected to, all I wanted was to belong.
Yeah.
And all I wanted was to be loved. And all I wanted was to be safe. And, so as I was growing up, this is basically what happened. So during that time, I lost self-confidence, self-worth, not knowing who I am, basically not knowing what is this kind of like secret society kind of thing. Because that's what you've been taught to believe. And obviously, I couldn't speak up. I was so scared. I was too scared to speak up. And the best thing that ever happened to me was when I finished my high school, I was supposed to go to Qatar University. So I applied and everything. I was really good in my studies. So the good thing is I was emotionally at one side, but academically, I've always, mom was like, you have to keep, you know, focus on your education. It's your key out. It's your, you know, the best thing. She always dreamed of me being a doctor, you know, and all that. So I was like, okay, I went into that field. And I remember the lady who was supposed to put my papers through. She was pregnant, and she ended up not putting my papers through for registration to university.
Right.
So what happened is I ended up the university starting and me losing potentially a whole year. Not being able to go to university. And my mom is a very, very pro education, pro, you know, you need to be, because she was educated, and she realized that the only way of us being able to stand on our own feet and not be a, like any man or anything that can, you know, harm us in a way, even if that happened, we are able to take care of ourselves. So that's why, because it happened to her, she didn't want us to be vulnerable. It was very pro education, so she came. I remember I was like so disappointed. They told her, "Oh, your daughter's paper is not where the university starting in a week," and I still didn't hear what happened. If I'm accepted, not accepted, what happened? And when we contacted them, they said, "Oh, we don't have your papers. We don't have anything registered. You're not registered in our system." I was like, "What? Where?" And then we ended up having a long argument. But then I was so sad. Disappointed. I remember it was in my room playing something on my this game thing, just laying there, and suddenly I see my mom coming through, and she's like, "I have good news." She's like, "You are going to England, and you're gonna take a whole year of English. You're gonna learn the English." Oh my God, that was the happiest moment ever. I remember, because England was so foreign to us at that time.
Yeah. So you applied to, you were, when you were applying, and you were actually applying to go to England?
No, I was applying to Qatar University.
Right.
I was supposed to be in Qatar, going to Qatar University, but the lady who was handling my paper, she was pregnant and she went into labor. So she didn't put my papers in, so I couldn't register at the university. So they didn't complete my registration.
Right.
So I ended up potentially losing a whole year of not learning. So instead, my mom said, "Okay, in this year, before you apply to university, in this year, you're gonna go to England to learn
English." Right.
Yeah.
Oh, see.
So I was really happy, because it was something extremely, like, something we would dream of. You know, it's not something easy, you know, to go to a European country or the West generally, especially if I've never been exposed to this kind of Western environment. So yeah, I ended up going to England, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because a lot has happened to me then. However, the whole process and journey made me be aware that what I was living in before was toxic. But the way I've been treated was wrong. And it took me through a long, like, most of my 20s were gone being clinically depressed, obese, hating myself, hating who I am, hating everything, especially living in a Western country. They have certain standards, certain expectations. I had to learn how to adapt between both the cultures. And it took a long time. And the internal struggle is still there. I was the only time I was able to speak up about the abuse is when I realized that person had children with them as well. And I didn't want whatever happened to me to happen to them.
Right.
Because the kids were in that person's presence. They were other kids in that person's who abused me as a child. So I didn't. And that was the only time where I was like warning the parents, "Don't leave your kids there. Please don't leave your kids there. This happened." Nobody believed me at the beginning, because it's a big, you know, this is like a big thing here. You know, it's like about shame, family, reputation, blah, blah. But I realized I'm not wrong. This happened to me. I didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this needs to stop. And that was the time when I told my sister, my mom. My mom didn't believe me at first. She couldn't even say anything to that person at first, because it's family. it's one of the hardest thing you can ever happen. And I know there are so many cases like this here. I know so many girls who've been gone through similar experiences, but they can't speak up because it's they put it under taboo or put it under family. It's like, how is this any relevant to any family? This is a crime.
Yeah.
How can you be okay with this? And because of the mental, you know, you're groomed basically,
yeah,
to a certain thing. I can't blame them if they can't speak up. But I realized I had to, because I didn't want other people to be subjected, other kids, other children to be subjected to that. When I said that, there was a big problem. Big problem. Some people said I was lying. Some people said,
how old were you when you, at this moment then, when you're speaking up now, how old were you when you spoke up?
I was around, I think, can't remember actually, my beginning of my 20s.
Right, okay. So so did you ever mention it when you were a lot, you know, you say you're up to 9 years old, during that time period when it was happening, were you ever told to be quiet about it by the person that was doing it? And
no, the what happened is that person manipulated my mind so much that if I said anything, they will blame me.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm thinking.
Yes, I couldn't speak. Couldn't speak up because I realized I would get in trouble if I spoke, and it's my fault.
Yes.
This is how manipulated it was.
Yes, because I've spoken to someone. I've spoken to a lady about that this week, who she'd been abused, but the reverse psychology of it is that if you speak up, all of a sudden it's your fault and
yep,
they're right.
They're the victim. They are the yeah.
And you're thinking, wait a minute, because maybe it's a family. Yeah, because it is because it was a family member or someone in the community, and this person in the community is well standing, and you know, you can't speak about this person like that, obviously. So then he puts the blame onto you, and then you start to feel, oh, well, I'm not supposed to say anything then. I don't say anything. Okay. And then you understand, you start being quiet for years and years and years. So when you did finally come out, how did that, what brought you to that courage of coming out? What made you want to come out of it? I know you spoke about this person, but what brought about that courage? Was it you just being older, wiser?
No, it's because I realized there were other kids being in the presence of that person. And I didn't want the kids to be subjected. And I realized they will be in the same room with that person. And I didn't want this to go out of hand. And I didn't want other kids to go through what I've been through. The kids also relatives. So I didn't want the kids I cared about to go through what I've been through as a child. In the presence, in that presence of that person. So I'm not gonna say the gender. I'm not gonna say who it is, but I'm just saying that this is what it was. So that's what made me speak up. I realized I can't be quiet. I didn't want those kids to be subjected to the abuse I've been through.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know how it was, and that was the only time I had the courage to say something. Say, please don't leave your kids there. This has happened. That's when I spoke up. That was the only time. And I realized, oh my God, that was like a big burden. Now I'm like, okay, this, the things that I was afraid of, you know, the shame, the family, it's gone. The fear I had was gone in a way that I had to, when I said it, because it liberated me.
Yeah, yeah.
It literally liberated me, the things I've been hiding, like, you know, the skeleton in your closet thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it liberated me because I realized, you know what, this is wrong. This needs to be said, needs to be. But I still struggle with the consequences of that during the child, the psychological, deep down, the subconscious.
Right.
That was my biggest challenge as I was growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I ended up going through a whole roller coaster of emotions, experiences, trying to fit in people's lives, to be a people pleaser so that people can love me. And I realized that's wrong, and I had to, I went through a whole revolution, a personalized revolution. And the big moments in my life, just highlighting fast forward. When I was at university, it was actually recent, like during my master's, actually, I reached my heaviest. I was so heavy, I started developing chest pain. My ankles got swollen.
Yeah.
You know, I realized I'm developing blood pressure problem, and I was so young, I was like still in my
20s.
I was like, this is wrong. This is, because I know what's happening in my body. I know the science of it. And I was like, this, I'm going to die soon. I'm literally going to die soon. I was so big. And if I don't do something about it, I'll be dead very soon. And I haven't even lived my life yet.
Yeah.
I never had someone to love, care about, never, you know, experienced life experience, never been able to shop in normal clothes, never been able to so many things. Any chair I would sit in, I was so scared to sit in because it would break in front of people and I'd be so embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know, being shamed to sit in a bus because I'm taking half of the seat and my hands is like nobody will sit next to me.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, these experiences get to you, you know, being in a plane, asking for extension, like belt extension.
Yeah.
These are horrible, horrible negative loop. Because I was in a depression, I would always get I was severely depressed, clinically depressed. They put me on medication, but I didn't take it because I realized it's not actual chemical. There is no such thing as chemical imbalance, unless you're genetically prone to it or had a brain accident.
How did you know that you? I mean, it sounds an obvious question, but it's not. How did you know that you were depressed?
I was diagnosed
yeah,
by it.
How did you get?
And I also read it.
How did you get to be diagnosed?
I would get into a cycle. I would get into a cycle where I feel like I'm the walking dead, like a shell. Everyone sees something, but inside I'm so empty, lifeless. You know, felt that. I would go in a binge. I've been struggling with binge eating disorder for a very, very long time. So I would binge on so much till I feel so sick. And I feel so, I would say, hurtful, really bad, hurtful things to myself. And then sleep it off. And then the next day, I know I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to see people. I don't want to, you know, I would isolate myself a lot. I've been in isolation so much because I realize I'm never good enough. Nobody would ever love me. These are the beliefs I've formed since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I've been driving my action till sometimes today even. You know, but being able to recognize, being able to realize, you know, I don't want to die like this. You know, and being so close. And then going to university for the first time, one of the best things that ever happened to me was going to the University of Bath. University of Bath is the changing point. My master's, when I had to do my master's there. And that was the point when I saw everyone is like, you know, fit and going to university, energy, and I'm like just dragging. I can see everyone's like, walking so fast, and I'm like so slow. I was so heavy. And I was like, this is not normal. That's when it hit me. I was like, I want to be able to run like this. I want to be able to do this. So I ended up joining the gym for the first time. And imagine going to the gym with all the people. Most of the people in the gym are athletes, but Great Britain athletes.
Yeah.
Most of them are fit, you know, as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you feel like you so don't belong there. But I had to push through. And through all of that, I would wear a skirt in the gym. Imagine wearing a trouser but skirt because I was so scared that people will see the fat juggling as I was exercising. And then I was like, I don't care. They're not paying my membership. Why would I care about what they say, you know?
Yeah.
So I ended up pushing there until I had some really good trainers and asked to care about me, actually. Say, what do you want? What is it that you want to do? From there, I started developing like a fat gym family, you know, where you go look forward to going there, meet new people who are pushing you and things. So from there, I started developing. I lost like over 30 kilos then for within that first few months when I joined the gym because I went on like full on for it. And then later on, I was on and off journey because I still had the internal struggle. I still had the binge eating disorder that I needed to get rid of, or the triggers, you know. So that's what I ended up doing. And then I lost over 54 kilos. So that's like a 100 something pounds. When I was there, I remember. But I still had the internal struggles. Still had the depression moments, still had the... So I went to therapy a lot, but that didn't work. Like the normal, you know, you go to university therapy, counseling and all that. That really didn't do it for me, especially with someone with complex trauma. So I ended up going for myself, and I looked up a few people. One of them is Matthew Hussey. I don't know if you know him. He's like a relationship coach.
Matthew, I've seen him on.
He's in Hollywood and stuff like that. I actually signed up for his program, his retreat. I ended up going to Florida, meeting him personally.
This is while you're at university or later on?
While I was at university, the first years of my PhD at that time. And that was a whole different change in my life. That was the beginning of a complete revolution of me, because I had to face what he does is brilliant. That's why I love this is what I'm doing now. This is the programs I'm putting people through, which is the retreat program to help them overcome a lot of their struggle. Because that was a trigger point, because I didn't know what NLP was. I didn't know who Tony Robbins was. I didn't know who like a lot of other famous people were in the personal development field. But Matthew did something that got me into a momentum. I started reading more books. I started searching more about personal development. I realized, I went on a course. I discovered that I discovered about Tony Robbins, and then I fell in love with all his products. So I ended up going meeting him, going to his, buying his master university, becoming part of that. I'm skipping through a lot of things. One of the most important things I realized, I started healing from within slowly, you know. Started picking up. I realized, okay, what are my emotions? Why am I feeling this way? How to overcome negative cycles of the thought pattern, you know, how to, it's a lot. But the start was Matthew. And then from there, I started learning a lot about myself. And then again, I had Tony Robbins when I went to his master university. All his programs, UPW, Unleash the Power Within. That was another like a momentum pushing me to learn more about this. And I realized I went for a course. I didn't know what NLP was, but I realized that's what he does. What Tony Robbins, I was like, I want to be like him. I want to be on stage. I want to be like him. And I belong there. That happened actually with Matthew, because I saw my teacher. Oh, this is like, I belong there. I realized what I was doing, that's not what fulfills me. I need to be there on stage inspiring people like him. So that was what was formulating in my head. And then again, during Tony Robbins, in front of 13,000 people, I got picked. One of the three who got picked out of nowhere. That was one hell of an experience itself, getting 13,000 people running, crying, breaking down in front, you know, and getting all these people coming to hug you from all different nationalities, all different cultures, all different, to say, go for it, you know, because I had to speak up about my trauma then. That was the first time I spoke publicly. And that was a lesson I learned. Vulnerability is power. Because when I spoke up in that event in UPW in front of those 13,000 people, I had women come to me from so many different backgrounds, so telling me, I'm so proud of you, you're courageous, you spoke up, many of us can't speak. And I realized I might be the voice for those who don't have a voice. That was the mission I took on myself. And I realized I need to speak more, I need to express more. Maybe what I've been through, what God put me through, is to make me stronger as a person, because I have a bigger message, a bigger mission in life. And when I look at all the people who are great in the world, like Oprah Winfrey, Tony, they've all been through hell.
Yeah.
All been through trauma, through abuse, through so much. But look at them now. And I realized maybe that's also my calling. That's what I've been through is a calling to help other people who've been through similar experiences that I've been through. And I got out of it, even though being coming close to dying.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the idea or belief I adapted in, you know.
Yeah.
This is the belief I want to believe, and this is how I want to move on with my life. And through all this, I realized I love coaching. I'm naturally good at it, not just coaching, mentoring. Because of the experiences I had so much knowledge as well, you know, because I had to search for the truth, search for things.
Yeah, yeah.
I carried with it, not just the intellectual side, but also the experience knowledge as well.
So experience is the main thing that takes you to the ongoing help of us.
Yes. So these experiences is the drive for me.
Yeah.
And also the knowledge. I realize I don't want to die with all the knowledge. I've got so much knowledge to give people, but I realize I'll be so selfish if I didn't actually share what I have, because it can be the manual or the life manuscript for someone else's survival.
Yeah.
Survival.
Yeah.
So that's what I've started believing and started. That's how I got into. And I also realized I was just living someone else's dream. Simply, I realized all these years I was just trying to please everyone else, family, you know. And also, to be honest, I love sciences. I'm one of those people who loves learning. I have insatiable appetite for learning. That's why if you look at my CV, I've got so many different areas, so many different qualifications, so many different areas, because I never stopped learning. And I think I got that from my mom. And the idea of her that instilled, you know, knowledge is power. You need to keep searching for knowledge. And so for me, I realized the more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know. And I want to learn and learn and learn. But I realize also, as I'm learning, I've got accumulated so much that I need to help someone else with it. Otherwise, I feel like I'm not contributing.
Yeah.
There's a missing part in me that I'm not doing. And I literally faced my mom and I told her, listen, mom, I don't want to carry on in the medical field, because I realized my personality. Carrying on as a researcher.
Yeah,
you know,
because
I realize it's just long hours, you're working for someone else, as much as it's rewarding once you discover something, which I did anyways. I lived that part during my PhD. I have my publication, scientific publication, of like the developing stuff, and so I've got that. And still, there was something big missing. And I realized it's that contribution part. The contribution for me is actually making a difference in someone else's life.
Give back.
And I realized if I carried on, I would be dying as a lab rat, you know, working on long hours. And this is not what I wanted.
Yeah.
As much as I have so much respect, I literally have so much respect for those people who love doing this. And they're discovering, and I love it. It's not that I don't love it. I love sciences. I like learning. But I realize my personality, I'm more of a people person, not someone who's a C compliance or a C quadrant in the personality, disc profile. More of an inspiring, I quadrant. And I realized that's why I felt I was suffocating, because my personality does not match the job or career I'm in. And that's when I started changing things and turning things around. And I'm still learning, by the way. Passion can fade away. You can love something, but after a while it can dissipate, and then you start discovering something different that you're passionate about. So when people say follow your passion, yes, but after a while, once you acquire that, you become a different person. So you need something else to challenge you, to push you, to make you look forward to doing. So basically that's what I'm doing now, and I realize I love it. I love the change I can make when I see someone in front of me and who's been gone through hell, and I can see the changes they're making in their life towards a better life, and that just fulfills me.
Yeah, it's interesting that just then you just said people who have gone through hell, and it feels like you use that word because it feels like you've actually been through that yourself. Hell, is that how you feel that? Your life has not been in sense of thing, but in terms of the way you know, like you say, you was almost on death's door. You know, you were struggling with your mental health.
It was
like hell.
For me, it was like, it's a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So much self-loathing and pain.
Yeah.
So much. If that's not hell, okay, I know the real definition of hell in our kind of, but it's a metaphorical exaggeration of extreme pain.
Yes.
Or,
that is
being in that kind of, state. But then learning the power that you can change how you feel, it's all in your hands. By understanding your mind, you understand your feelings, and understanding how to navigate through them. That was an eye-opener for me. And that's how I managed to get through a lot of negativity, let's say, or self-negativity.
There's a couple of things I wanted to ask you. There's obviously more than one thing, but you spoke about getting therapy, and then you spoke about there's a few things here: therapy, going to university, and going going abroad. If you've been through all those things, you were called names, you'd been through abuse
and bullied a lot, yeah.
Bullied. All the things attributed to, like you say, going through your, when we say hell, I'm talking about, we know what hell is. It's our personal, how we feel about something that we have gone through, and all going through. So what was it about you that, what I'm trying to get at is, what was a trigger for you to go to therapy? What was that strength in you to go to therapy? Was it, because for some people, they'd have gone to talk to the parents, or some people it might be, this has happened on this day, and you think, you know what, I've had enough, I'm going to go to therapy. What was it about you that made you go to therapy?
I'll tell you something. I went through a traditional type of therapy, the one you go to a psychiatrist, you go this. That didn't do it for me.
Yeah, but what was it about you that made
me is like, there must be an answer, because I always have this belief, deep belief, that there is always an answer, but sometimes we don't know it yet.
Yeah.
So you have to keep looking. This belief is in me. I don't know from where, I don't know how, but it's always in my head. There is always an answer to a problem. I just don't know the answer for it yet. My job is to look for it. Keep looking. If I can't find it, keep looking, and never giving up. So that was the key in my head. For some reason, I developed resilience throughout these experiences, So it could be because of the good and the bad during my childhood. It builds the resilience of a child, because yes, they can go through, but you always have the nurturing, the mother, the grandmother, the good side that can actually say, hey, you're still okay. You still can survive. So as you grow up, despite going through trauma, some people are not resilient, but some people develop resilience as they grow up, especially children. So for me, I think I had that part that kept me going. And also the fear of God as well, because I realized, we have the belief that, you go to hell if you kill yourself. And I've tried to kill myself, actually. I was suicidal by the age of 16, just before I went to England, and the first few months while I was in England. So I attempted a lot, but I had someone to stop me at that time, thankfully.
Yeah.
And I was self-harming a lot. I did. I have scars. I was self-harming a lot because I realized, there's like a relief, or. But then I realized I needed to stop that, and I ended up self-harming in other ways. Bad experiences, bad friends. But then I still kept going.
I think, because what it is for, it's not for me, it's for listeners out there
let me finish, sorry. I remember now what I was saying. So when I went to the traditional one, it didn't work for me, and that's just me. But what worked with me was me seeking for the answer, number one, and I went the unconventional way, number two. So I went for people who are not traditional. I went for international best mentors in the world, the best coaches. I went to seek them out, you know. So I didn't settle for the average, the normal. Like, I was like, I need to find a solution. These people must have a solution. Especially when I went to Tony Robbins, especially when I went to Marissa Pierce. Marissa Pierce is my dearest teacher. She does the rapid transformation. I don't know if you know her, you're familiar with the work. Well, you need to look her up. She does rapid transformation. It's the most latest form of therapy that I actually learned from her directly and worked brilliant with, especially with my mind and trauma. So it helped me process so much that normal conventional therapy did not do it for me. And that's why I was like, okay, why would I go for someone and go through a whole schooling system where they just teach you history and some few skills? I'm not being like, you know, I'm not discrediting anyone or anything like that. But then if there's someone else out there who's got an easier, a better answer, a better tool, a more advanced way of doing it, you know, why would I not go to them? So I ended up doing, like, some people are not good, like some people are good. So you try. So I ended up learning, I knew Tony Robbins was doing NLP, even though they call pseudoscience or something that came up by Dr. Richard Bandler, which I went to him directly also and got qualified with him. But he's a brilliant man. He knows certain things about the brain, even though some people discredit it, but it does work. It does work. That's why still people are using it. That's why Tony Robbins using it. That's why Marissa Peer, she combines four types of therapy: cognitive behavioral therapy, psychotherapy, NLP, and hypnotherapy. So they're all combination, plus her 30 years of experience from treating thousands of celebrities and patients. And she created this program, which I went through it, and I realized it's the best program yet. Because I've been through even the Tony Robbins bit, she does it better. I realized, for me personally, at least, I actually went through the actual, because we practice on each other, you know, during, when you learn it, you have to practice on other like an RTT therapist. So while we're practicing, we have issues to solve, unsolved, because the therapist needs the therapist. Because while we were doing it, I ended up going back, rooting back to my childhood problems and the views that I've been through. So much in the subconscious mind. Once you understand it, I was like, oh, that's why. You know what I was doing all these years? What I was doing, especially with the binge eating disorder, what I was doing, there are two scenes I remember from my childhood that actually makes sense now. One was, you eat to make yourself big, to make yourself ugly. It's a mechanism for your brain to protect you from other people attacking
you. Yes, it is.
Okay, that was one. And number two, I had another scene where I associated strength and being big is a good thing, a belief I formed, because I ended up pushing my abuser at some point, and I realized, because I'm older now, I can push that person away. That was the scene I had in my head, and I realized, that was my aha bulb moment. I realized, that's why I'm trying to be strong and big, because I equated being strong and big with protecting myself.
Yeah, protecting yourself and size and things like that, yeah.
So I had these different, like, when you start understanding what really happened, makes so much sense, and we can reframe these beliefs. It's like, okay, get stronger by learning martial arts, learning this, not only by food. So as an adult, like, now you're reframing these old beliefs as a child, because as a child, that's the only thing you know. And you realize your brain is trying to protect you by making you ugly and making you big, so people are not attracted to you. And people will not be able to easily, like, harm you or hurt you. And that was the only time I realized, when I was with Marissa, I realized all these reasons why I was binging and why I was self-sabotaging in that sense. And I was like, wow, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And I started taking actions against basically that, and trying to better myself slowly. But it's powerful.
It's interesting you spoke about children being more... When things happen to them, is because we often say that if you go through something and you're if something hits you when you're older, it transfers back to when you're a child. Your trauma from when you're older transfer, because most traumas start in childhood, regardless of, you know, if it's...
And personality form as well there.
Yes.
There and then, your personality is formed by then.
Yeah, so it's interesting that as an adult, if something hasn't happened to you, you know, you've had a decent life or whatever, and if something happens to you as an adult, you're more likely to get depression or commit suicide as an adult, because you haven't been through the things to build up your resilience. And it's interesting that you say as a child, it's almost become this thing that's happened to you, is you're questioning it, but it's almost like there's some sort of normality to it, because nobody's questioning it. If you do question it yourself, everyone's going, oh no, it's okay, don't say anything, keep quiet, and you almost normalize it. But in the back of your mind, it's not normal to you, even as a child. So then you build up,
because you're hurt.
Yes,
hurt. Yes. You're innocent. You're like a vessel, fragile vessel, and you've been, you know, stabbed, put around, thrown around, being belittled, like your personality. You know, a lot of people do that, especially a lot of families here as children when they beat them up. Remember the idea of the kid trying to please his parents by sometimes he doesn't get enough grades. You know, so he feels bad because he feels like, oh, I should get full marks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? But what happened here is that those parents, a lot of parents do this, you know, when their kids doesn't get a full mark, they don't treat them, oh, but you can get better, you know, they would say that to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they would say, oh, you should get a full mark. You know, this is a problem because you are treating, you're teaching the, what's the lesson you're teaching the child here? You're teaching them that if you listen to me and get the full mark, this is how you're gonna get love.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a conditional love.
Yeah.
What they're teaching them, they're teaching them conditional love.
Yeah.
Like, if you do good, then you get love. If you don't do good, you don't get love.
Yeah.
This is what happens. And as they grow up, they start becoming what? People pleaser.
Yeah.
Because they realize that the only way to get love is by doing what everyone else wants.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they end up miserable.
Yeah.
They end up flat. They end up, you know.
Yeah.
It's very important for parents to be aware of this point. It's like, even if your kids did a mistake, it's part of life.
Yeah.
This is how they learn.
Yeah. They learn,
you know.
They learn through mistakes.
You learn from it. Let them make mistakes. Let them learn from it. As long as there is not so severe that they're going to kill themselves. But let them learn through life as well.
Yeah.
You teach them what you can, but also give them the choice to make up their mind. Because through experiences, they get wisdom.
Yeah.
You know, they learn from their mistakes. They know it's bad. They know it's this. But let them, because no one is perfect. Have this idea of how you need to be perfect. Also, these kids will learn they're never good enough.
Yeah.
They will grow up being unhappy because they feel no matter what they do, they're never enough.
Yeah.
So it's not a good thing to treat kids with this.
Yeah, because I've said this on the podcast quite often, that words are very powerful, and what we say to children can have an impact on
their
thoughts. So sometimes I've had the children say things, and I say, whatever you get wrong, you're always going to get. I said this to them the other day, and they looked at me like strangely. I said, well, think about it. I says, even if you get things wrong, you're always going to get it right. And they didn't quite grasp that, what I was saying. But then after a while, if they start to think about those words, they start to think, oh, yes, that's true. Because if you're making mistakes, at some point you get things wrong, at some point you're going to get it right, because you're going to want to correct the mistake that you've made, or you're going to correct what's wrong to make it right. And they start smiling, saying, oh, and because I come out with these anecdotes. I remember there was a school in England, and there was a kid come up to me, and one of them was saying, oh yeah, I play the flute or whatever it was, and then another girl came up, and she sat next to me. This is the first time in the school, actually, and she said to me, yeah, you know what, I play I play the recorder. I goes, "All right, do you really?" And she went, "Yes." And she goes, "Oh, but I'm rubbish." And I said, "Pardon?" She goes, "I'm rubbish." And I goes, "Okay." I goes, "Look over there." I goes, "What's in that corner there?" And she went, "Where?" And I goes, "In that corner, look." She goes, "Oh, it's a bin." I goes, "What goes in that bin?" She goes, "Oh, rubbish." I goes, "Are you in that bin?" She goes, "No." And then she went, I goes, "There you go then." I goes, you're good at recorder, but you're not as good as it as you want to be. I know that you will be in the future." And she went, she looked at me and she went, like that. And she started laughing and walked off. And I thought, that's, to me, that's very important. The words that we use with children will help.
Not children only, adults as well.
Yeah, adults, but it also will help them grow. Will help them to grow, to be, to teach others. Like you're doing there, you're actually, from your experience, you're actually helping others. Let's talk about, before we talk about what you're actually doing now, and the whole, you know, what you can give to people. Your experience of the self-harm and the suicide, again, your resilience has helped you overcome those. But was there any point where you thought, this is enough? You know, you say you're going to commit suicide or self-harm. Was you thinking at the time, "Oh, I've had enough"? What was your mindset at the time?
I can't remember a lot because it was a long time ago and I had to wipe away that memory. But like, I remember I was around 15 or 16. And I remember I was in so much pain that I just wanted to give up. But I had someone stop me at that time, which was my sister. But like, I had the knife and everything, and it was in the middle of the night. But after that, like, it gave me, like, it was a wake up call. It's like, don't do this. You're gonna go to hell, you know, kind of thoughts. And then from there, you know, sometimes when you're in a bad situation, you adapt and accept it. So you live in it. But then when I realized that I've been taken away from all that and went to a whole different country, a whole different life, a whole different environment, that kind of slowly dissipated, that feeling. Yeah. I still had pain, but still, like, what do you call this? It wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
But I would go on cycles. I would still go on cycles because I still have unhealed traumatic experiences. But it's been, my life has been a long journey, and I, to be honest, some of the stuff I said, some people might consider shameful, especially in this culture here. Some people, you know, think, "Oh, I shouldn't be saying this." I was like, "No, you know, God put me through this, and I realized He put me there for a reason, you know." And my experiences could be, as I said, the survival manuscript for someone else's. You know, and resilience. Some people, I think it's debated in scientific literature, and even people who've been through that, they still have health issues, psychological issues as an adult, you know, that carries on. But at the end of the day, I know that my life is in my hand now, you know. When I had to go for healing, to let go, there's a difference. You know, when people say forgive that person, forgive whoever harmed you, it doesn't mean, oh, you go become friends with them and talk to them and, like, you know, be okay as if nothing happened. No, it's about letting go of that experience so you can focus on you, not keep dragging it in your life, dragging it into everything, you know. And that's the difficult part for most people, to let go. So being able to forgive or letting go of that experiences, because they also, there's a reward system to it. Because that's a way of making themselves either pity themselves or become helpless. It's a form of attention from other people. So it depends on what need you need to fulfill. We have six human needs. So one of them, it's probably be love and connection. And some people get love and connection the negative way, by making themselves sick, by making themselves, you know, feel sorry for me, this is how it is, I'm vulnerable, I'm a victim. And you live through that because that's another form of way of getting attention and getting love.
Yeah.
unfortunately, when you realize that's a bad way of doing it and there is a better way of doing it, then that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, yeah. Your journey has been a roller coaster, and like you say, going to England and maybe was a catalyst for change, and the light bulb moments that you had that made you kind of go on to America and make those changes in your life. I was going to ask you this, in terms of the culture where we live, the country and everything like that, how have you found people, if you've spoken about your story, not just family members or whoever it may be?
Actually, I haven't really spoken about it here. I've only spoken to very few close friends, girls mostly, not guys, because I realize, I don't know, but to be honest, I'm not ashamed of who I am, of what I've been through.
Yeah.
I realized I'm a rebel here, probably the black sheep of the family.
I was going to say something about that rebel, because I was going to say to you, if you have spoken about it, how do you feel that you're going to be...
I know I would be judged. I know that for a fact. People will say whatever they believe and reflect based on their own, or what they did, they project onto others. You know, their own insecurities, their own...
Let me turn the light on, one
minute.
Sorry, it's a bit more brighter where you are, so yeah.
It's okay, I put the light on. The thing is, are you recording? Because I can't see any recording happening.
Yeah, I'm recording through my microphone here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see ya. So where were we?
You're talking about...
Oh, about the people here and me talking about it and being a rebel here.
Yeah.
I'm still experimenting with this because I just came a few months ago back to Qatar and trying to readapt to the lifestyle again. And I realized I don't want to lie and don't want to be someone who's not me by trying to bind to, you know, the traditional way of people's thinking. Not even the traditional way, you know. I believe in my religion. I believe, I have my own beliefs. I have my own understanding of things. But I know people will judge me, especially because I'm not covering up, you know, the scarf. I do wear it in places, but I know I wear it for a particular reason. I have my own beliefs in it. And I know I get judged by it a lot, especially from family. Especially it's like, oh, you shouldn't be going out like this in front of you. Like, yes, but at the same time, if I go out to souk or anything like that, you know, the like shopping and stuff, I would wear. Because I know that's going to be harmful to me if I didn't wear it. Because of the way the culture is. And I have to respect that. And I have the utmost respect. But for example, in England, wearing it is more harmful to me, you know, because I got a lot of harm from it. Being shouted at, being spat at, unfortunately, yes, you get that. And I was like, what's the point of the scarf in the first place? Is to protect the woman, you know, from harms away.
Yeah.
If I'm in an environment where this is actually causing me harm, why would I do that? If I'm in an environment where not wearing it would cause me harm, then I would wear it. So this is my kind of understanding of why in the first place we got this law, a rule to cover your hair or cover whatever. And I also have my own like research, my own beliefs in that. But at the end of the day, it's my personal choice. And I know people will judge that a lot here.
Yeah.
So I have to face that. But to be honest, I'm not afraid to face it, because people who love what I do, love what I'm teaching them, who would want to learn more, they would love me regardless. And people who want to find a fault will find a fault no matter what I do. So I accepted the fact that, you know, some people will love you, some people will hate you, especially if it was on social media. And I realized people who really care about you without judging you will always try to find the good in you. And people who be critical, they have their own insecurities about how life should be or things should be based on their reality, then, like, you know, it's their problem, it's not mine. And at least I am authentic with who I am. I'm not trying to lie to people or pretend to be, oh, I'm this perfect angel. you know, at the same time, I'm not trying to be, I'm a bad person.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just be like me. This is me. This is how, who I am. This is how I formulated. These are my choices. No one is perfect in this world. No one is like not going to be, you know, we have in our religion something called like being exempt from sins. Only prophets are exempt from sins.
Yeah.
You know, that's the belief we have. But everyone else is sinful. You seek forgiveness from God, but everyone chooses their sin. You know, everyone who does a mistake, even the perfect parent, the people who say, oh yeah, you have to do this and that. If you look into their life, they're gossiping, first of all, to begin with. They're treating their kids or family bad by shouting, screaming, swearing at them. That's the worst thing you can do to a kid, because it lowers their self-esteem, their self-confidence. You know, their worth, the third word, when you call them names.
Yeah.
That's not okay. When you beat a kid, that's in a form of abuse, because they say, you know what, I'm going to show you. I'm stronger than you. You're nothing. How can you build a generation that way? A healthy generation.
Yeah.
You know? And I know there are a lot of people are like that, including my family members. I'm not saying that, you know, my family's, they're even, they are the reason I went to this field, because I know some of them are screwed up. But I realize it's also the norm here. It's part of the norm, but they think it's okay. Oh, I don't need to feel this way. Or they will ignore the feelings they have. If they've been through abuse or verbal abuse, they think, oh, this is how it is. This is how we grow up. So what they end up, in order to let go, they all go smoking, go girls, go do all kind of other unhealthy coping mechanism to feel better about themselves, or social media or porn or whatever it is, you know? So what they do is trying to seek a momentary pleasure in their bad environment, and that's wrong. So the most important thing I always advocate for is to understand what awareness is.
Yeah.
Understand yourself, to understand your thoughts, to understand how you feel. What are these feelings when you feel? How to deal with them the healthy way in order to let go of all the unhealthy and live a better life.
Yeah.
So that's my kind of way of going about it.
Yeah. And before we speak, just last thing before we speak about your, what you actually do, how have you learned to trust after what you've been through in terms of when you're so young, the abuse and everything? Do you ever feel that you can trust somebody, or do you feel, is that still that lack of trust there? Or do you, what's your self like in terms of trust?
Okay, with trust?
Yeah.
I think maybe it's because this was my nature. I tend to trust people easily. But at the same time, I don't put high expectations. So what I do, in case, even in any relationship or any people I get to know or anything like that, I know people can change, and I know people have their own agendas sometimes. And when the people approach you for a particular reason, they have their own way of thinking about things, and that's okay. But the question here is, are you okay? Am I going to be okay if they betrayed me? Am I going to be able to handle myself and handle my emotion if that happened? This is the key. You can never trust 100% anyone, even your spouse, your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever it is, that your potential husband, whatever it is. But you need to build that relationship with yourself, that you know that you're going to be okay no matter what happens to you, because you build that kind of resilience in you. That even if they betrayed me, I'm going to be okay. Even if they betrayed me, I would trust and love, because this is part of life. Because that's joy. When you love someone, or you enjoy life, when you're trying to travel, trust this person. Because that's connecting to others. It's the root of our being, you know, being in connecting to other human beings. But being able to trust completely, you can trust. But for me personally, but I realized, even if they broken that trust, it will never be the same. I would never go back to that person, or never go back to that kind of experience. But I know that even if it happened, yes, I might be in pain for a little while, but I know I'll get over it over time. So knowing that, that keeps me going for being open with other people, being trusting with other people.
Yeah.
That's the belief I have.
And just give a brief outline of what you do, the name of your company. What is it you do, and how people can access your company?
Okay, this is a bit of quickly. I'm going to say this. I built my company during I was supposed to take off last year in the UK, and had to leave everything behind. My whole business collapsed in a way because of COVID,
right.
And also I had to leave the UK completely, leaving everything behind and restarting in Doha. It's only been a few months.
Right.
So, however, so my company is Aisha Al Sheikh International, but I'm going to close that and I'm opening another company in Doha, inshallah. At the moment, I'm freelancing. So what I do is hypnotherapy, RTT, Rapid Transformational Therapy, with Mary Sapir's method. I'm also a mentor and a coach, educator. So I educate people on so many different skills, from time management, healing, to confidence, depression, dealing with anxiety, depression, public speaking, different fears. So I've got a wide range of topics I do help people with. So I'm resetting my whole social media now. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but I started building myself again.
Right.
And I am getting myself back into helping people. So I do workshops, clients, one-to-one. Also, I'm starting soon a circle of a workshop online now, because of the COVID, we have to adapt as usual.
Yeah.
I learned my lesson from last year.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm doing it now. So this is what I'm doing, but I have big vision of tackling the education. I really want to include personal development in schools. I really, really want to educate the person, the children, about how to understand their thoughts, how to understand their feelings. It's part of their curriculum. It has to be, because they never teach us how to choose our career based on our personalities, on what we really enjoy, and how to develop that into a very successful thing. So because I've been through that, I know now the way, the exercises, whatever it is, to teach these kids to how to figure this out, how to build this up, and also collaborating with the known figures in Doha to get together and do things together to help the whole community.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm starting to do at the moment.
It's funny you say that about the children as well, because when I remember, because I was, for me, it's not about just teaching and teach. I said this to you before. I like to get to know the children. In my school, because of the job I do, I know nearly all the kids, and I know all the nuances and the little things that they go through. And I remember there was a girl. I think it was 2 years ago, and she came. The last year or year before, she came to me, and she said, "No, you know, because I speak to them on a different level. I speak to them at their level." And she come to me and she goes, look at my drawing. I goes, wow, that's brilliant. Because I'm an artist myself. I've done, I'm a graphic designer and artist. I said, oh, that's really good. That's really good. And she's kind of looking at me thinking, I goes, I'll tell you now, and your parents might think I'm a PE teacher. I'm not just a PE, I'm bigger than that, I'm more than that. And she went,
yeah.
She went, oh. I went, I'll tell you what you do. I want you to keep doing that over and over again, and do more and more drawings. She came back to me with more drawings later on, maybe a couple of weeks later. Then again, I says, what you need to do now is, because I know that you can do it and you want to do it, you want to get some sketchbooks, get your mum or somebody to get some sketchbooks and go keep doing it. And even if you make a mistake, keep going to the next page, and keep building up your sketches. The other day, she came into the school. She'd gone to another school. She'd gone to another school and she came in. So obviously, I think one of her siblings was here. And she goes, Mr. Andrew, look. And she brought in books to show me of her drawings. I go, see? Look at this. So you've got more sketchbooks there. Look at this. Brilliant. And she'd improved. And she goes, oh, yeah. I says, I'll tell you what, come back again and show me some more later on. So I said, you know, so what you're doing is kind of a synergy there. So, you know, well done for doing that. And what would you say to anybody that may be going through any struggles or the things that you've gone through at the you've gone through for your life, what would you say to anyone that may be going through that at the moment? A couple of lines.
I would say diamonds are made through pressure, and what's happening to you right now.
I'm laughing because I heard that earlier.
Really?
Yes, I heard that maybe a couple of hours ago.
Oh wow. Universe message to you. It's a universal message. But I would say that through adversity you become a greater person, because the key here is to turn your adversities into victories. So no matter what happens in life, there is always a solution, there is always an answer. You just have to keep looking for it. And for people who are going through pain, we have a saying in the Quran that says "Inna ma'al usri yusra," which means with every difficulty there is ease. So, and things, storms, and also storms are not meant to last. So whatever you go through right now is a phase, it's a storm in a chapter in your life that will close and open another chapter. So never give up. That's the key here. Never ever give up, because yes, you go through difficulties, but there is also an ease after that. So that's my message to that person. And always seek for help. Always.
And talking about seeking for help, what would you say to anybody that maybe... What would you say to anybody? And where can you be found? Where can you be found in social media if anybody wants to come and contact you?
I'm very, very, very active on Instagram at the moment. I had Facebook I used to be active on, but like I'm letting it go, but I need to get back into it. But if anyone, that's the direct way of approaching me, or they can email me directly on withdraisha@gmail.com. So it's withdr Aisha, Aisha, @gmail.com. So this is the email I used for the general public or the people who require, like need help or anything like that. But generally through social media, mostly Instagram.
Yeah. And I'd like to say thank you for coming on the show. It's been fascinating listening to you. It's been brilliant, actually. I enjoyed it. And I say thank you
so much.
And I appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for hosting me and allowing me to speak and take all the time in the world.
No,
I know I said a lot, but thank you so much.
No. Thank you so much. And that was Men on Us. Speak to you soon.